fierce fighting between Ethiopia and Eritrea had been going on for over, and still going on, in fact, but over a half century. And Tewodros Fekadu was born right in the middle of it, in not just a war-torn country, but also a torn family. And that motivated him to seek a better life elsewhere, so he traveled to Egypt and Japan and then settled in Australia. His memoir, No One's Son, is published by Leapfrog Press, and I'm very pleased it has brought Mr. Fekadu to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you.
So you have an Ethiopian mother and an Eritrean father. Since Eritrea was annexed to Ethiopia after World War II, wouldn't both of your parents have been considered Ethiopian?
Yes, they used to be. And after 30 years' war, Eritrea became independent.
That's because Eritrea had been separate from Ethiopia before. It was, and for a while, was an Italian colony. And then after World War II, was just connected, was given to Ethiopia?
Yes. I mean, there was a federation system, and then basically King Haile Selassie made it one country. Then Eritrea wanted to be independent, and the civil war started for almost
1958.
Around that time.
And then it ended in 1991. And how old were you at that time?
I was 12, 13 years old. And I was at that time, actually, when the war ended, I was actually in Ethiopia, the capital of Syria, Addis Ababa.
But you were going back and forth because of the circumstances of your parents.
Yes, because I was just from place to place, and I was just trying to survive.
Now, when you were in Addis Ababa, I always have problems with that. Did people look upon you as Eritrean, or was that not something that anybody would have even thought about?
Yes, I was looked at whenever I travel. Basically, I speak also the two languages, the Ethiopian language and the official language, Amharic, and also the Eritrean language, Tigrinya. So, people look at you, if you especially go to Eritrea, they look at you like you are outsider, and also you have a name. Again, even in Ethiopia, in the same things, you have also a name because you're basically different people to these people.
Did you know the circumstances of how you were conceived when you were growing up?
Yes, because of the situation I had when you grow up without family, without, father. And family is important to protect you. And that was the case, the big problem I had. I was look at myself. I was outsider. I was different. I was stateless. So that's why I was asking myself, who am I? Where I come from?
Your father had raped your mother. Was that connected with the war?
No, nothing to do with the war. He had a power at the time, and she was 14 years old, and she was forced. So because of that, my mother's life and myself, we have to go through hell.
And she would refer, and your family, her family would refer to your father as Satan's tool and a devil. Did he ever acknowledge that he was your father?
At one stage, he acknowledged, and then again, he again said, I'm not his son. And until he passed away, he refused to admit that I was his son, and he kept sending me to orphanage and kept denying. So I was no one's son, and I was abandoned. I was on the street and rejected and betrayed by a family.
Did his family accept you as his child? I mean, some grandparents want a child even if their son doesn't.
Yes, they acknowledge, but he had a position. He was very well known. So he had the responsibility to look at me and help me, but he didn't care. And so basically, if he doesn't care, nobody cares. And also, he was looked at his profession as a doctor. So I was to blame. So basically, I was thinking like I was maybe cursed, and why am I treated this way? So.
And your mother was just living on the generosity of family and friends. But she kept on, she sent you to stay with him. Why would she do that under these circumstances? Just because she couldn't afford to keep you herself?
Yes, people advised her because when they saw me, I was malnourished and didn't go to school. And they advised her, you know, I think you have to send to his father's family. And that's what she did. And she sent me in the back of the truck to Eritrea. And so... She was young. She was 14 years old, and
not ready to have a child, especially.
Yes.
And having a child when you've been raped even makes it more difficult.
Very difficult.
Were you ever able to work it out? You stayed with her in your teens when you went to school. Did your relationship improve?
Well, that's the thing that I was trying to understand, because I didn't grow up with her. I mean, I grew up until I was 9 years old, but I didn't remember any love from my mother's. So that's what I keep asking my mom until I finish this book. You know, why did you send me? Why you didn't kept me with you and give me the love? But now I understand. She was young and she was trying to survive.
Now, you are half Ethiopian, half Eritrean. What about religion? Were the religions the same?
The religion, well, I was sent to the Catholic orphanage, so I become Catholic. But the religion, the major religion is Coptic, which is Orthodox religion we have. But also we have a Muslim and we have Protestant too.
And used to be more Falashim in Ethiopia, but a lot of them went to Israel because they felt persecuted.
Yes, we have an area it's called Gondar where we have a lot of Falasha, which is they are related to the Jewish people and going to the Israel.
So you spent much of your life at that time when you were going to school, the mission school, living on the streets?
Yes, I was on the streets, and also I was in a orphanage, and also I was living from place to place all around Ethiopia. Imagine whenever you travel from place to place, you have to learn the new culture, new language. So for me, it was just surviving, just challenging life.
My guest is Tewodros Fekadu. He's written a memoir called No One's Son, the story of a defiant Ethiopian boy and his bold quest for freedom. You decided to leave. Why did you choose Cairo as a place to go?
That was the only option I had. I didn't have anywhere to go, no any other opportunity to come, because that was the easiest. So then I went to Cairo. Even Cairo, it was difficult to get a visa. So somehow I got the Egypt visa and went to Egypt. So then I thought maybe through Egypt I can go to other country and ask for the refugee asylum.
So you had to fight the immigration bureaucracy, but you wound up getting in. And did you get a decent job?
Well, there's no job. I was overstay after 1 week because I had only 1 week visa to go to Egypt. Then you become overstayed. And so all I would do is going to embassy, apply for refugee asylum, and going to UNHCR. So it was just waiting. There was many people from Sudan, from Somalia, from Ethiopia, Eritrea, waiting. So
how old were you at the time?
I was 21 years old.
And then you went to Japan, of all places?
Yes, I went to Japan.
What do you think you were going to be able to do there?
You know, I thought freedom in Japan, but... because of the bureaucracy, I just end up in detention for almost 3 years and 3 months.
You got a job, and then they put you in a detention center. You were really mistreated there. They're not friendly to immigrants?
No, not really, especially toward the refugee, because we were treated like a criminal, and we were also included with the criminal people. It was like a cage, and there was human abuse in that detention center.
But you did get some legal help from lawyers who wanted to help, in humanitarian organizations. How did you eventually get freed?
Through Amnesty International and the Catholic Church support, again, I was released because I was, you know, I was sick. I lost my hearing in that detention center, and also I was doing hunger strike. I was almost want to die in that detention center.
But you you spoke two languages in Ethiopia. You speak English. You speak Japanese as well?
Yes, I have to, because there's no communication with the Japanese unless you speak their language. So I have to learn the language inside the detention center.
You got some help from a woman named Asuka, but then her attitude toward you changed?
Yes. Basically, I was asking, refugee in Japan, and I want to live in Japan. But then in the end, I decided to go. I was falling in love with Australian women, so I decided to go to Australia, and totally that changed everything.
You met her in Japan?
Yes.
But you didn't tell her the truth of your situation.
Yes. Basically, because I was pretending. I was just living in Japan, and I didn't really want to tell all the story, because my story is complicated, and I thought maybe nobody can understand me.
Well, there are so many differences between the two of you, age-wise and backgrounds. How did you overcome them?
With my wife, because in the end, when there is love, that love, nobody can take it. So basically, we have arguments to these days, and also we talk a lot. We make sure we respect each other. So when there is love, I think anything is possible.
And she helped you go to Australia, where you became a citizen. You went to Ethiopia to research the book. Was it the first time that you'd gone back since you had left for Japan?
No. For the last 10 years, I've been going to Ethiopia because to do this book's research, because I have to re-interview people and understand the culture, because I was also interested in the culture. And so that's why it took me more than 10 years, this book.
Mm-hmm. You reunited with your mother?
Yes.
Were you able to work things out with her?
Well, it was difficult, but gradually it works, because she understood the situation I've been through. Unfortunately, not with my father's side, because they're very proud people and didn't get any support. But I tried my best by going there and taking even risk.
Well, a very important Australian writer, Thomas Keneally, wrote a book in support of the Eritrean independence
Toward
movement.
Asmara.
Is there an East African presence in Australia? Is there a community there that you can connect to, or are you pretty much alone?
Actually now I've been going to Ethiopia also because I'm building a health center with my friends. So for me, the focus is just to raise the voice of the children and also women. So I really want to make sure that the children are treated equally as a human being, because we all the image of God. So we need to really support the women and also children, because children will grow.
And you're also making films.
Yes. That's what's my dream, and I have a company called Moonface Entertainment, works with film and documentary.
Meanwhile, you've written this large memoir, which really is fascinating. I'm sorry we could only do a very short version of it, because there's so many fascinating stories within it. But that's why people buy books, and this book that we have just been discussing is called No One's Son, The Story of a Defiant Ethiopian Boy and His Bold Quest for Freedom. It's published by Leaping Frog Press. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Leonard. Thank you for the opportunity.